Welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast. If you love tennis and want to improve your game, this podcast is for you. Whether it's technique, strategy, equipment, or the mental game, tennis professional Ian Westerman is here to make you a better player. And now, here's Ian.
Hi, and welcome to episode number 17 of the Essential Tennis Podcast. If you love tennis and you want to improve your game, the Essential Tennis Podcast is the place where you want to be. Every week, it's my goal to add as much content as possible to the Essential Tennis Podcast that can truly be a help to tennis enthusiasts everywhere. Whether it's about technique or about the mental game or equipment or strategy or anything else tennis related, I love talking about tennis and anything having to do with it. And if you have a specific question or problem or something you're dealing with, and you feel that it's going to be a help to you getting good information about it, always feel free to contact me and let me know what your question is. I'd be happy to help you out. Remember, during the week, stop by EssentialTennis.com. Lots of good free content there. There's a blog that I write that has instructional content about lots of different subjects having to do with your tennis game. There's also an equipment review blog that master racket technician Jeremy Plumley writes that has to do all about your equipment, your racket, your strains, and shoes, clothing, anything else. Lots of stuff there that is helpful to your game as well. And also there's the forums at EssentialTennis.com where you can go and talk with other tennis enthusiasts. I'm always working on other features as well of the website, and hopefully it continues to grow to become a better and better resource for anybody out there who does want to improve their tennis and who loves the game. And also, like I mentioned a second ago, any questions you may have, you can submit there on the website. I'd love to hear from you and hear how you're doing with your game and what needs help. And I always respond to every message I get, and I'd love to help you and anything having to do with your tennis game.
And now it's time for the Essential Tennis Focus Topic of the Week.
The focus topic of the week this week is the use of pronation on your serve. Pronation is something that really is essential for your service motion if you want to have an advanced level serve. If it's something that you struggle with right now, your serve in general, if it doesn't have a lot of strength, if you can't hit it very hard and not with a lot of spin, it's very possible that you're not doing a good job of pronating on your serve. I have an outline written out here that we're going to go through, talking about different functions of pronation, what it is exactly, why it's important. And I'm also going to talk briefly on what serves it's used on and how it's used. So let's get started with what it is. Pronation, a good way of describing it, is basically rotation of your forearm and shoulder to the outside of your body. The way that you see what pronation is, if you're sitting or standing, if you put your palms in front of you, if you put your hands in front of you, and face your palms towards each other so that they're parallel with each other, just right out in front of your body. If you take your right hand and turn your palm face down, you've just pronated your arm and your shoulder. So face your hands together, palms towards each other so that they're parallel, and that would be perpendicular with your body. If you rotate your hand to the outside, meaning palm down and then continuing on to the outside, you should be able to make about 180-degree rotation, starting with your palms facing each other and then turning to the outside with your palm so that it's then facing the same way as your other palm. So if your right and left palm are facing each other to begin with and you pronate your right palm and keep your left palm the same, when you finish pronating, making a full rotation with your shoulder and with your arm, both your left and your right palms are then facing the same direction, and that would be to the right. Same thing if you're left-handed, face your palms together, and if you turn your left palm down and then to the outside, again, both your palms will be facing the same way, and that would be to the left if you pronate just your left palm. That's what pronation is. Now, there's a misconception that I've seen in several different places. The use of pronation is not anything having to do with your wrist. Pronation comes from your shoulder rotating, and it also comes from your forearm rotating. Those are the two parts of your body that rotate in that direction from inside to outside. Your wrist will flex up and down, and there's a medical term for that. It's flexation and, I believe, ulnation, I think, is the opposite. That's back and forth. That's the direction your wrist flexes. Your wrist does not rotate inside and outside. It flexes up and down. So pronation is use of the bigger muscles as compared to your wrist. That is your forearm and your shoulder. And basically, pronating is used for any overhand motion. Every baseball pitcher and player who throws overhand pronates as they throw. Also, a football quarterback. Every time a good athlete throws a football and throws a spiral, that's only possible through pronating your shoulder and your arm to the outside. That's what creates the spiral. In fact, I oftentimes use a football to help teach people how to pronate out on the court. People who don't really have the feel for it. If you didn't grow up playing sports that used an overhand motion, it's something that's hard for you, a lot of people to pick up if they didn't do a lot of it growing up. So if you didn't play a lot of sports like football or baseball, something where you throw a ball, a lot of times it's unnatural for people who didn't do that growing up and as a child. But it's the same motion as those two other sports. So why is pronation important? Pronation is important because it aids in racket acceleration. And it does that by lengthening the kinetic chain. You've heard in previous podcasts, Dr. Jack Kripsak and I talking about minimizing injury by using the big muscles in your body, by using your core first. The kinetic chain in any sport or physical activity basically refers to the natural progression of uses of different parts of your body. And that progression should go, as Dr. Jack said last week, from the ground up. You should start by using the big muscles in your legs and in your core to start rotating and pushing forwards towards the ball. And then from there, smaller muscle groups start to pick up as well and accelerate the racket further towards the ball. And by pronating, you add length to your swing and you add more muscle groups to your swing that are smaller as compared to your core. So a good serve in tennis starts with using your legs to push up towards the ball. It uses your core to rotate in a circular motion towards the ball. Also uses your core to pull your body upwards towards the ball, again in an upward direction. And so using your muscles in your core, you can get a great deal of force pushing upwards and rotating forwards towards the ball. The next part is your shoulder, your forearm, and your hand. Those will all come after, sequentially, the use of your core and your legs. And so it works from the big muscle groups up through the smaller muscle groups, and it builds, your swing will then build energy as you work through that kinetic chain. Using pronation activates the use of your shoulder and your forearm to accelerate and whip the racket up towards the ball. And it brings, it gives you the potential for a lot more racket head speed, which is what gives you power and spin. Without pronating, you can still have a decent serve by using your core and your legs to rotate and push upwards towards the ball. But when you miss out on that ability for the last second acceleration and snap of your arm and your shoulder towards the ball, you miss out on a lot of potential there. And so pronation is very important. A good visual to understand kind of how this works is to think about a bullwhip. If any of you have ever used like a Indiana Jones style bullwhip, leather that's braided, it's very long. It starts out with a thick grip. It starts off thick. And then as the whip continues to get longer and longer, it gets thinner and thinner. When you time the crack of that whip correctly, the acceleration builds as the crack travels down, or as the whipping motion rather travels down the length of the whip. It builds in speed as it continues down the length of that whip, and by the time it gets to the end, it's built up over the entire length of that whip. Usually they're very long, I think 15, 20 feet. And by the time that little wave has traveled down the whole length of the whip, it's built up so much speed that it's incredibly powerful. Even though the very tip of the whip is the smallest part, it gives the most power throughout that entire crack of the whip because the acceleration has built up throughout the entire length of it. And a bullwhip, when you crack it, is so loud because I've heard that the tip of the whip is traveling actually faster than the speed of sound once that wave has traveled all the way through the whip and gotten to the end. That's why it's so powerful. It's that buildup of momentum. That's what we're trying to accomplish on the serve by using pronation, is that buildup of strength and acceleration up through your body and then let it out through the tip of that whip, which is your forearm, your hand, up through the racket and into the ball. Without pronating, you're more or less pushing at the ball instead of accelerating and whipping at it and cracking at it. There was a question on the Essential Tennis forums asking if pronation is used on different types of serves. And the answer to that is yes, pronation is used on every type of serve by a higher level player. Kick serve or slice serve or flat serve, pronation is used on all of those. The difference is in the timing and where the racket face is facing exactly, by timing the pronation and the direction of the pronation a little bit differently. For example, on a flat serve, you will come up and pronate to meet the ball with a square face. Your racket strings will actually be facing right at your target, and contact is made right in the middle of your pronation if you're a higher level player. So you're making a full 180 degree rotation with your forearm and with your shoulder, and contact is made right dead in the middle of that pronation with your racket face facing your target. And so you're not imparting any spin or very much spin. You're trying to hit the ball at your target by pronating and facing your racket face at your target. On the other hand, a spin serve is timed a little bit differently. It's a little bit different direction. You're trying to pronate still. You're still rotating your arm and your shoulder. However, when you make contact, your racket strings will be angled slightly so that as you hit past the ball and through the ball, you're imparting spin on the ball because you're hitting past the ball at an angle. And so you're still turning the racket and pronating out to the side, but the timing is a little bit different so that the racket face is left at an angle to spin the ball instead of hitting it flat. Hopefully now you guys have a good understanding of what pronation is exactly, what parts of the body are being used, and exactly how it's used in a service swing to create spin and to create power. This is a topic that really is better suited for visual learning, and I'm going to definitely be doing a video lesson on this once I get the video lessons underway, which hopefully will be in the next couple weeks. I'll get my first one or two up. But this is something that's important to understand and important to do if you want your serve to continue to improve and you want a high-level serve. Pronation is absolutely essential.
And now it's time for Essential Tennis Q&A.
All right, we've got a great question here coming from Ian in Ottawa, Canada. Always nice to meet another Ian. He says, I am 14 years old and an avid tennis player. I have good footwork and I am refining my technique. Right now I use a semi-Western grip, but I don't have that much spin. Should I switch to a Western grip? And how do I do a Western grip? What are the advantages and disadvantages of a Western grip? Well, Ian, that's a really good question, and it's one that I've fielded a couple different times, both online and in person also with my students. My short answer to you is no. I don't think you should change your grip any further, and I'll explain to you why. This is a very important technique question to understand, and it has to do with generating topspin in general. It's important to understand how it works, and just making a grip change is not what you need to do. Let me tell you why. The reason is changing your grip on its own is not going to make any difference in how much spin you make. The amount of spin that you create on any shot in tennis, whether it's topspin shot or a slice shot or maybe a kick serve, flat serve, slice serve, whatever, in any shot in tennis, the amount of spin that you're able to make is dependent on two things: the angle of the racket face and the direction that your racket is moving in when you make contact. Those are the two parts of your swing that are going to determine how much spin you put on the ball and what kind of spin you put on the ball. When you hit a topspin shot, a topspin ground stroke, you want your racket face to be perpendicular to the ground. You want a flat racket face. And the only way to make topspin is to have a flat racket face and have the path of your racket moving upwards when you make contact. If you're not making topspin, one of those two things is not happening, period. That's just the pure physics of it. Now, different grips make it easier to hit more or less spin or different kinds of spin because they help change the racket face. Switching to a different grip does not change the direction that you swing at the ball. Depending on what grip you have, you're going to be set up to make it easier to hit slice or to hit topspin or to hit flat on a ground stroke, depending on what you're going for. And basically, the more you turn your grip towards a Western forehand grip, the more your racket face is going to close, the more your strings will be facing towards the ground naturally on their own without you having to turn your hand and actually close the face on your own. So that's why a semi-Western or a Western grip is good for topspin. It closes the face more compared to a continental grip. And so that allows you to focus your efforts on making an upward swing to rotate the ball, to spin the ball. A continental grip, by comparison, leaves the face much more open. And so to hit topspin with a continental grip, not only do you need to swing upwards, but you have to actually take your hand and physically close the racket face as you swing, because a continental grip doesn't make it as easy to keep the face closed. Your strings will be more open compared to an Eastern or a semi-Western or a Western grip. The more you move towards Western, the more closed your face is. Now, Ian asked for the pros and cons of a Western grip, and they are, basically, a Western grip's pros are that it closes the face very extremely so that it's easy to make a lot of topspin. Because your face is so closed, you can swing upwards very, very steeply and very fast, and the face is closed enough to still keep the ball inside the court. If you were to swing upwards really quickly and really steeply with an open face, well, the ball would go straight up in the air, you would launch it, and it would go way outside the court. There's different degrees of closed racket face depending on what type of shot exactly you're trying to hit. So a full Western grip makes it easy to hit very heavy topspin. I mean very heavy topspin. The con is that because your hand is being placed all the way underneath the grip to have a full Western grip, it's much more difficult to drive the ball, to hit the ball strongly forwards, and to hit a powerful shot. And so a lot of people who have continued to switch their grip farther and farther and farther they'll find that eventually they're able to make spin, but all of a sudden they don't have the ability to hit the ball hard anymore. And so they get stuck with this looping shot, and they don't have the ability to drive through the ball and to put it away when they get a short, weak shot. So that's the downside of a Western grip. It's really very extreme, honestly. Full Western grip, very few professionals even use. Semi-Western is usually, for most professional players, as far as they're going to go. Semi-Western is plenty far to make a lot of spin. It closes your face very well, and you should be able to make a lot of spin with a semi-Western grip. So, therefore, since you're at a semi-Western grip and your face is closed, since you're not making very much spin, or at least not as much as you'd like to, it means that your racket path must be too straight. You must be swinging horizontally, and you're not swinging vertically enough to make enough rotation. Changing your grip has nothing to do with the path of your racket. Switching farther to a Western grip is not going to give you more spin in and of itself. You have to start learning to start lower with your racket before the ball gets there and swinging upwards and attacking at the ball from below to create the rotation you're looking for. So this is why I'm telling you not to switch your grip. I play with a semi-Western grip, and I can hit as much topspin as anyone could ever need. I can hit tons of spin on my forehand. In fact, sometimes when I haven't been playing a lot, I actually have a little bit of a hard time driving through the ball. I'm used to teaching 8-10 hours a day with a continental grip, where all I do is swing relatively straight and kind of drive the ball forwards. When I go to my playing grip, I actually have a hard time driving the ball, but I can make all the spin in the world on my forehand side and really hit a very heavy shot. So you need to learn, Ian, to get a better vertical swing path in your forehand. And to do this, the way I usually teach people how to hit topspin for the first time is to come up to the service line and drop your, first of all, find your grip, get your semi-Western grip. Just drop your arm and your shoulder completely relaxed down by your side. Turn to the side like you normally would for a forehand and completely relax your arm, your shoulder, your hand, and just drop your racket down. Then from that position, use your opposite hand and drop a tennis ball to yourself. And using your normal contact point, just start from that dropped position with your arm completely loose and dropped and just pull the racket upwards. Don't even rotate your body forwards and worry about hitting, driving the ball. Just pull the racket straight up, and you're trying to just create spin. This should be done very slowly, just like a quarter pace, very slow and relaxed. And we're just trying to make the ball turn and spin towards the other side of the court. If you do this correctly, you should see an arced path in the ball. The ball should go up into the air, clear the net very, very easily by several feet. You should literally see the ball turning towards the other side of the court, and then the ball should curve again in an arced path down towards the court again on the other side. Should easily land inside the court after clearing the net by a wide margin, at least 3 or 4 feet. So do this for a while, and again, very slow, very relaxed. We're not trying to hit the ball hard, just trying to get a feel for what it's like. We're kind of trying to exaggerate it by dropping the racket as low down as it'll go, very relaxed, and just swinging upwards, just coming upwards. I really almost hesitate to use the word swing. I just want you to pull the racket up and make contact with a relaxed hand or a slow, relaxed swing. That's the type of path you need to learn to implement into your normal swing, is dropping the racket low, below where the ball is when you make contact, and swinging upwards at a steep angle so that when you make contact, your racket is traveling up and you're making the ball rotate as your strings move past the back of the ball. So Ian, hopefully that explanation made sense, and go out and try what I suggest and see what you think. Get back to me and let me know how it goes. If you make that upward swing and you miss the ball long, it means that your racket face is too open And again, a semi-Western grip is more than enough to keep the face closed. So let your hand relax. It's possible you're opening the face up with by having a kind of a tense hand or forearm. You could be turning the racket face open as you make your swing. Make sure your hand stays very relaxed, and your face should stay closed enough to swing upwards and make rotation instead of hitting the ball lawn. If the ball goes lawn, then your face is too open. Let your hand relax and close the face.
The Essential Tennis Podcast is brought to you by
Bridgewater Medical Group. Is a multi-specialty medical group located in Bridgewater, New Jersey, and is your home for primary care, gastroenterology, sports medicine, and general internal medicine. They offer a broad array of on-site, state-of-the-art services to make your healthcare experience more pleasurable. Scheduled appointments are preferred, but physician assistants are available for walk-in care. For more information, call Bridgewater Medical Group at 908-722-0808.
For more information on sponsors of the Essential Tennis Podcast or to become a sponsor, visit www.essentialtennis.com. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everybody, that's all for today. I'm sorry this isn't quite as long of a episode as some of the past ones. I've been kind of shooting for around half an hour the last few, and so this will just be a little bit short. Just had a really busy weekend, and past week has been very busy. My wife and I just purchased our first home here in Maryland after moving down here just a couple years ago, and just closed on it today, actually. So didn't have nearly as much time to work on the podcast and the website on my day off as I normally do. But hopefully episode number 17 has still been helpful to you. And I will still be letting another episode release on Thursday. And on that episode, I'm going to be having equipment expert Jeremy Plumley. We're going to have a little talk about strains. We're going to talk about synthetic guts and poly and natural guts and also hybrid strain patterns. We're just going to have a good talk about different kinds of basic strains, what types of players those different strains are for, and their benefits to your game. So hopefully that'll be informative to you guys. Before Thursday, if you guys have any string questions you'd like me to ask Jeremy, I can work that into the discussion as well. So that's all for today. Hopefully you guys are doing great with your tennis, and hopefully the podcast continues to help your game grow and improve. As always, if there's any way I can help you, go to essentialtennis.com, send me a quick note, and I'll get back to you. Thanks very much for downloading the file, and I look forward to catching you guys again this coming Thursday. Take care, and good luck with your tennis.